You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey guys, it's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at CinemaBlend and co-host of the Real Blend podcast, here to introduce you to a bonus episode that we kind of teased in the original show and then it came together, so we're really happy to bring it to you. It is a deep dive spoiler discussion about Scream 6 with the guys from Radio Silence. They were really nice enough to come back onto Real Blend the first time that they directed Scream. About a year ago at this point now. And now that they're back in theaters with their follow-up to it, and they bring Ghostface to New York City with the original cast, we had a lot of things that we wanted to discuss. You guys will hear up front at the beginning of the interview that this is, again, spoiler-filled. So it's really a conversation that you're going to want to listen to after you have gone to the theaters to see Scream 6. But we listened to a bunch of the questions that you guys had. And of course, we had questions ourselves about things that we saw in the trailer. And these guys are really forthcoming with their filmmaking process and their thoughts about the franchise in general. Without still, you know, they still sort of couch where the franchise might go, because even though this one opened really big, you never really know with the Scream franchise. You know, I personally think they're going to make another one pretty quickly. But this is a series that has survived over the decades by knowing when to take a break and sort of just moving on from there. So either way, with Scream 6, there's a ton to discuss. We dive into as much of it as we possibly can in the time that we are given. So again, this is a spoiler-filled conversation about Scream 6 with the guys from Radio Silence. Press play on this one, man. Enjoy. It's going to be a good one.
It's 12:30 on a Monday, and it still feels like
they're not going to adjust the numbers like 30 million down.
Yeah, pretty sure the number one movie in America right now is Everything Everywhere All at Once. We just have the highest.
Well played.
Fair enough. Yes, fair enough. Guys, it is so good to have you back on the show. We always get a chance, appreciate the chance to dive into spoilers with you guys and talk the ins and the outs of the new Scream. When we were talking to you guys last on the show, we teased the story from a question that I had asked that you could not tell at the time. I'm going to start there. And it involves the phone call that Samara Weaving was having at the beginning of the movie with a date that she's on. And it's someone giving her directions on where to walk to. And later, so I can tell everybody who's listening to this right now, this is a full spoiler conversation. If you haven't seen Scream 6, stop listening now. Go see it. Come back. Listen to all the stuff that these guys talk about. You guys have free reign. It never sounded to me like Tony at all. But is that Tony's voice or is it someone else's voice? What is the story? Because you had a story you said you wanted to tell me.
It is Tony's voice.
It is Tony's voice
on the phone call. But the picture that pops up on the phone when Reggie calls Laura is actually Jimmy Warden Samara's husband and writer of Cocaine Bear and their dog Muzzy. He's a dear friend of ours, and became, you know, we became close with obviously both of them on Ready or Not. But it was we unfortunately had to, you know, leave Cocaine Bear to do Scream 5. So it felt like just such a fun, like, kind of nod to our love of Jimmy, our love of that movie. And, you know, just a fun little kind of personal anecdote at the very top of the film.
That is really funny.
All right, so does that mean Cocaine Bear exists within the Scream universe?
Shared universe.
We definitely should have had a Cocaine Bear in the subway sequence. Yeah, now we missed out.
Yes.
Not forward thinking for that.
Give the people what they want. So guys, you know, Scream fans, obviously, I think hopefully drew parallels between the killer motives between Scream 2 and Scream 6, that being the killer being related to the killer in the previous film. Does that mean that fans going into potentially Scream 7 should expect a similar parallel in that maybe the next killer will be related to the Carpenters in some way?
We can't tell anyone what to expect.
Right? Yeah. Scratching off ideas on a sheet of paper and they're like, well, shit, there goes that idea. Was that meant to be like, were we meant to draw those sort of parallels? Were we meant to see like, in the sense that like they're in both films take place in college and the killer reveal features sort of this idea? Cause I love Scream 2 and I always loved the Mrs. Loomis character reveal and motive and the idea that she had extensive plastic surgery. Are we supposed to draw sort of those sort of parallels between 2 and 6 in that way?
I mean, it was sort of, it wasn't planned. Let's put it that way. Like when the first draft that we read, those weren't the killers. It was a different motive. It was a whole different thing, you know, but it ended up there and there's something that just felt so right about it. Like as soon as Guy and Jamie pitched us that, we all went, yes, that's great. And then keep all the kind of misdirect of mob mentality online and people, you know, rumors about Sam and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, it just kind of happened. Like, so it wasn't intentional.
Yeah, I think our gut was, you know, drafts were coming in. The family of the core four, you know, Tara, Mindy, Chad was feeling like such a centerpiece that I think when it was pitched that the killers were also a family, it just felt, the symmetry of that felt really awesome to us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we now have to follow up on what you guys just told us and ask who were the original killers and what were the original motives.
It was pretty much what's in the movie pre finding out that it's Richie's family. It was that their whole alibi was basically the motive, right? Does that?
Yeah, it was like a vigilante. Yeah, kind of justice.
Yeah.
Based off of a rumor that started. Yeah, that started online.
Got it.
And I think one of the things that, like, when they pitched, when Guy and Jamie came up with the idea to make it the family, it also did the thing that we always love about the first one is where you kind of get the motive and the this and the that, and then Billy gets really serious and does his, like, well, let me tell you what it's really about. And even Stu's kind of thrown off. But that idea of, like, oh, there's still a card to turn here. Like, it's not over yet was really cool to us.
And it's emotional. It's like,
yeah,
regardless of, you connect to it, you immediately are like, oh shit, this is revenge, this is personal. It's not about like some kind of pop culture or cultural commentary. It's about revenge. It's about pain. That for us, I think, was just so key and so important that you can kind of distill it to a really simple and really, you know, tragic kind of moment.
Tyler, there are two scenes at the end of the film that kind of resolve some stuff for two characters, Mason Gooding's character and then Gail. We hear Gail is also doing okay, and it made me wonder, was there ever a version where Gail didn't do okay? And I kind of wonder, does Courtney have any say in that? Like, if Courtney tells you guys in the middle of production, like, hey, this is going to be my last one, do you not have to include a line later on that says, no, Gail's fine, she's okay, she's in the hospital?
No, we always, We always knew Gale would survive. It was never on the table. I think that, we're still living with the like residual sadness of losing Dewey. And it doesn't mean that we wanted to make a movie that pulled punches, but I Gale was never on the chopping block. I think at one point we had a monologue from her that she was delivering from a hospital bed. But it felt sort of like a hat on a hat. And like, it was kind of clouding that moment, really the sort of end really being about the Carpenter sisters, but she was, mm-hmm. She was never on the chopping block for us.
Okay.
Guys, I think for me, one of my favorite plot devices that has been introduced in these past two films is Sam sort of communicating with Billy through these hallucinations, through the reflection, and obviously you guys bringing back Ski, which is fantastic. How he looks the same just frustrates me because the idea of looking the exact same as you did 25 years ago is just annoying.
Don't stop it.
I promise you I don't look the same as when I did when Scream came out. Is there any chance that would you guys ever be at all? I feel like now I'm just throwing out hypotheticals a lot. Would you guys be at all interested in bringing back Laurie Metcalf for her to start maybe having hallucinations of her grandmother and seeing Mrs. Loomis around everywhere? Because I feel like Mrs. Loomis is a fan favorite that doesn't get enough credit. And I think it'd be just be freaking great to see her reprise that character.
Anything's possible.
If any of these ideas I'm throwing out end up in the film, I got to get some kind of a special thanks, or like you kill me off in the opening scene. And like, I want something in that.
Deal.
Even if it was just an excuse to work with Lori, like I sign us up.
I'm trying to think, like, because obviously she's done so much work since doing Scream 2. Like, does she talk about Scream much? I feel like that's just not something that she, that's, I feel like she's Sheldon's mom. And then obviously was in Lady Bird, but yeah, I feel like I don't talk. I hear her talk. If I were to interview right now, I feel like I have to ask about Scream 2.
That's a really good question. Cause I don't know. I don't know if she's ever at the conventions or anything either for it. So no, that would be a great question to figure out.
Well, if I make that connection, we're getting a real Blue exclusive.
Have us on just so we can say hi.
So I want to ask a really quick question and then I want to lead into another, question, if you don't mind. Does Sam stab Wayne 22 times?
Sorry, I just have to call out the Wayne thing. It is so hilarious to us that people have picked up on the Wayne of it all.
Yeah,
it's only in the credits, right, Wayne?
Yeah.
No, we love it. This is not a negative thing. It's just because we always joke like his name is Wayne Bailey, kind of as a fun thing for us.
Okay.
And that was
because it wasn't in the script either.
No, we made it. No, it was in the script. It came from the script, but it's never in the movie, but then we put it in the credits. But we would joke like, oh, Wayne Bailey. So anyway, sorry.
He never gets mentioned by name in the movie?
Not Wayne, no. But we like
Detective Bailey.
Yeah.
Detective Bailey. Does Detective Bailey get stabbed 22 times? If only because I know that earlier it gets referenced that she kills more than 22?
Yeah.
All right. For a reason?
32? How many did we end up with?
37?
That's all right. I thought it was
42? It's like a 40. Lot.
I thought it was 43, including the eye stab.
I think that's right. That sounds right.
Yeah.
Is there does the MPAA say like at a certain point you have to stop?
40 or is like, that not even discussed? Their guidelines, 44 is the limit. So we like to push it.
our only marching orders to ourselves going into that scene was that she has to outdo what she did to Richie. Well, I don't think we intended it to be almost twice as much.
Yeah, it's intense, and I thought maybe it was mentioned specifically to sort of set that up, but you guys definitely doubled it up at that point. So
you guys, between this film and the previous film, continuously are pulling at the thread that there's like something really dark going on inside Sam, and the big question being, I guess, how she's going to choose to channel that. And I'm sort of curious how far down you guys want to take that, and do you, is there potential that like we're going to see our final girl change sides in some form or fashion? Like, is if the original, you know, Scream films were about the evolution of a final girl, like Are we meant to believe that these films are about the evolution of a killer? Like how dark are you guys imagining Sam is going to get?
This is like Breaking Bad for screen.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I personally don't think I'd want to see Sam. I like seeing her embrace it the way she does, where, you know, she goes way overkill when she murders people.
I personally love seeing Sam as a hero and just like really struggling with that dark element. I think that's like, you know, we go almost full Star Wars with it. Like the dark side's always calling, but you know, you need to make that choice every day. And you need to decide how you want to live. And I think, you know, I think just with Sam moving forward, you know, hopefully she put a little bit of it behind her now, and, you know, they're going to get the help they need together. And hopefully that relationship together can bring them forward. But then again, who knows, like who knows what's next in their lives. I'm sure they just went to Denny's after they left the theater and got a good breakfast. And then they're going to talk about their therapy schedule and then they're going to move on. So it's like,
yeah, Denny's in Denny's in Halloween costumes. Yeah. All the stabbing, all the blood was just Halloween. not real injuries.
You guys better be careful, because you know, Denny's loves a good breakfast movie tie-in. Like come have the, like, you'll scream for our like morning hash browns. Like they love a good, yes, so be careful. You're going to get a pitch from Denny's for Scream 7.
No, but I think really quick, just to talk to that arc a little bit more, we sort of loved the idea that if Sam last movie in 5 was kind of struggling to reconcile herself with that, that in this one, she's sort of willing to share it. And there was a conversation that we had a lot around that moment behind the screen when Tara looks at Sam, when Sam says, "I'm not a killer," and she looks at her little sister, and the little sister's like, "Come on, like let's fucking go." That there's a moment of them embracing that was felt like the right evolution of that mm-hmm. story.
Chad, I'm going to tell you a story that and Jay can back me up on this. There was one point in the middle of the news cycle between when you guys found out that Nev wasn't going to come back and then the movie still had a long way to go. And I said to Jake, I said, I think this is bait and switch. I said, I think Sydney's Ghostface and this is all a long con. And Jake was very smart to say, like, if they were really doing that, that's a terrible story to put out into the press about her. Yeah. So I was like, you know what? You're probably right. But then there is a line in the movie where it Ghostface does say, like, Sydney never made sense, you know, as Ghostface. And, But it made me wonder, did you ever at any time, even when Sydney was on the board, think about like, ooh, that would be the ultimate twist. Like if we somehow figure out a way to give her motivation to become Ghostface, did that ever cross your guys' paths?
No. I think the best part of Sydney being Ghostface.
No, yeah. No. But, yeah. Just to be clear.
Really?
No. Though in the original Scream, it's like really nice seeing her take off the mask, you know, when she's getting Billy with the umbrella and everything like that too. But like, besides that, I think just Sydney is just the ultimate hero. And, and you know, I think that we have enough other darkness in the movie that we didn't need to go there with Sydney. And I think that was like part of the character development for Sam Carpenter, I think, was to be able to like have to deal with something like that, because she is not Sydney, you know, and she never was trying to be Sydney. She's a completely different character. So that darkness lives in Samantha Carpenter, not in Sydney Prescott. I don't ever see Sydney being a ghost face.
Okay. Worth a shot.
We were talking before the show started and we were sort of saying like, look, like as fans, we want to see Nev come back and we want to see Sydney come back. But at what point is it mean of us? Like if you were to read a news story about a woman who was being chased by 6 different sets of killers, you would just go like, my God, like this poor girl. So at what point, I guess, is it mean of us to just go like, yeah, we want to keep bringing Sydney back? It almost seems rude to the character. I do want to bring up before we let you guys go, the shot that in my theater yielded the biggest reaction. And it is the first time in 6 films we've ever seen 2 Ghostface at one time. And not just 2 Ghostface at one time, we get the knife wipe. I'm sort of curious, at what point did you guys sort of realize like, shit, like we've never seen that. And why can't we see that? Like, I'm sort of curious about the origin of that moment.
That was in the draft, and it was chilling to read. And I think our whole thing was you know, there's certain moments when you read a script for the first time that really just pop. And, you know, whether we actually talk about it or it kind of rears its head later and say, don't fuck up this moment. This moment is really, really good. And that was definitely one of them. We knew that it was like, oh, this has the opportunity to be like a franchise high in terms of just a single moment where you go, fuck. I will say fun little side fact is that shooting that was very, very, silly, like in the comedic, best way.
Right. It was silly.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's, you don't have the cool score and all the stuff. And it's just wipe. Like, it's very subdued.
It took them a lot. It took a while too to get them to get in sync. And then we're like, guys, they have masks on. Just say it. Say you're gonna do it. Just wait. If you have masks on, just say wait. And that's how we got it at the end. And that's like one of my favorite parts of the movie too. You know, and we did ask them to take it out of the trailer because we wanted to save it for the theater, for the movie, which was really nice. We knew that was going to be like the first thing marketing would want to use, but then they did. And we're like, can you please just take it out of the trailer? Let's save it, make it special.
Oh, you can't show that.
Thank you. No. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Right. They also wanted to show the killer in the trailer for some reason.
But yeah. That's another conversation.
Did they really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay. Another quick question before get to my other question. I love the ladder scene. I think the ladder scene is a spectacular set piece. Who has a ladder that size in a New York City apartment, though?
That's a good question. But, like, scary enough, like, the guy who came to fix, like, the part of my chimney needed, the spark arrestor put it on it the other day, and then he showed up at the house to fix the chimney, and he pulled out the exact same ladder, and I'm like, what the fuck? And I was like, took a picture of it as he was going up. I'm like,
you don't live in a New York City apartment.
We had chosen that location practically and then replicated it on the stage. And when the set was being built, we were actually in the process of kind of redesigning what that ladder sequence ultimately ended up being. It was scripted first as the ladder sequence, and then for production reasons we were going down a path where it was going to be something different. It was still going to have a kind of verticality element to it, but it wasn't going to specifically be the ladder gag. Mm-hmm. And then after running around and around in circles, we realized, well, fuck, it's actually going to be easier to do the ladder thing that was originally scripted. Like, we're overcomplicating a thing that was already really perfect on the page. Mm-hmm. And so we pivoted after that. We're hoping to God that we'd find a ladder that would fit the practical location and then what we had, of course, fabricated on the stage. And that ladder is just like a stock ladder. It was like perfect. Like within a foot, it was exactly the length we needed it to be to cross that, what was ultimately, I think, like a 15 and a half foot gap.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot about, like, is Danny the maintenance guy? Like, does he do maintenance? For trying to sort of reverse engineer, justify that, you know, why he would have that ladder in the apartment.
We even talked about seeing, like, painting on the wall in the background. Like, he had been painting the apartment or something. But all of it felt like, who gives a shit? There's a ladder. Let's get it. You know,
right, we talked about him walking in the lobby in that scene where they kissed, that he was going to have a six pack of Coors in the ladder.
Yeah, I honestly just kind of assumed it. Like, I thought maybe like people in New York, like, I was like, oh, well, if there's a fire, maybe he keeps a ladder to like get out of the apartment.
And that's it. Like, no, you're
sure.
Right.
That's it. I knew
that's it.
Sure, that works.
That's how I justified it in my mind.
Before they kick us out, this is our last question. I thought I saw something. I just want to ask if it actually happened. It looks like Kirby gets stabbed in the exact same spot where her scar is, and that Hayden gives like a bit of an eye roll. Does that actually happen?
I don't know if I've ever noticed the eye roll, but definitely the same spot. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
The eye roll. Okay. Wouldn't surprise us if Hayden did that. Like, she is, she's just like that level of connected and thoughtful about her performance.
Gotcha. I have to go see it again to see. So again, guys, congratulations on another huge weekend.
And
I hope that this means that, you know, we get to talk to you guys next year. Would you want another year Would you want another year to breathe, or are you ready to dive back in?
I missed that little break. I'm not lying.
Yeah. Well, continued success, guys. Enjoy this. Awesome. The reviews were terrific. It seemed like everybody really loved the movie, and the box office was great. So we're really happy to get a chance to catch up with you guys again.
Thank you
guys
so much.
Thank you
so much.
We love you guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate you guys.
Take care, guys. Thank you so much to Paramount Pictures for moving mountains to make that happen. And thanks so much to the Radio Silence guys for coming back on Real Blend. They are becoming friends of the show. We're always excited to have them on, and hopefully we'll continue to follow their filmmaking career as we go. We'll be back with a full show on Friday, where we're going to be discussing some stuff still from the Oscars telecast, and we're going to review Shazam Fury of the Gods. And because of that, we're going to have David Sandberg is going to be our guest on the regular Friday episodes. You guys know the drill. The new show drops on Fridays, so hit subscribe, turn on your notifications, and as soon as the new episode is available, you guys will be the first ones to hear about it.